The viewpoints expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them and are not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.
Hi, this is Al McFarlane, host of The Conversation with Al McFarlane. You're listening to 90.3 FM, KFAI, Minneapolis. I'm Al McFarland. Welcome to The Conversation with Al McFarland. Glad to be here and glad to have you along today as well. Today is Tuesday, February 24th, 2026. And I want to thank you for being a loyal listener and supporter here on KFAI FM 90.3 in Minneapolis and St. Paul. And also thank you who are connecting with us through the various social media platforms. We're streaming live through the YouTube channel of the Black Press of America, the National Newspaper Publishers Association, and we're streaming live through the Insight News channel on YouTube as well. And in that regard, we'd love you to support this program by becoming a member. There's no cost, but just showing up and allowing us to notify you when we go live on YouTube is what the membership offers you, and it offers us a chance to broaden, expand our network of friends and colleagues and companions. So we want you to be a companion. Join the program by subscribing to The Conversation or to The Conversation with Al McFarlane on YouTube, the YouTube channel. We're also streaming on, I think, LinkedIn and Twitter. We're doing some shorts after each program, so you go to YouTube and you find the clips, highlights of the day's program. That's kind of very cool as well. Well, I got a couple of essays that I wanted to get into today that are timely, and a couple of friends here who helped me navigate those essays and also the variety of current affairs, hot topics. What's a hot topic for me right now? On the kind of fun side, the less stress side, I'm so impressed with what I'm reading and watching YouTube about this young cat named iShowSpeed. If you're not familiar with him, go to iShowSpeed at YouTube. And this is a young brother, 21 years old, who just turned 21, actually, who in the first days of this year, in January, achieved a 50 million subscriber base for his YouTube channel. And he did that while he was in the middle of or at the end of a 28-day tour of Africa. What Speed does, he's a kid from, I think, Cleveland, Ohio, or from the Ohio area. Maybe it's not Cleveland, but he has been a YouTuber since he was like a kid and immersed in the technology. And so I remember an interview where he was saying his mom, you know, noticed he was putting too much energy into the computer, not enough energy into just being social. He's also a gifted athlete. He just was gifted. He's the natural athlete with speed, with strength, and with ability, agility. He's fearless as well, both in his athletic prowess, but also I think in his imagination, in his ability to conceive what could be and what relationships ought to exist among ordinary people. And testing that, I believe he's done this international tour. He's done a couple of them, but the big one that I'm excited about is the tour he just completed, 28 days, 20 countries in Africa, meeting African people, sort of avoiding the dignitaries, the protocols of statesmanship, and going straight to ordinary people on the street, people who are musicians, dancers, athletes, challenging people to foot race, to do handstands, push-ups, backflips, his specialty, and having a lot of fun. Well, why is it important? Here's a kid, a 21-year-old, who now has a 50 million subscriber following across a number of continents, but certainly rich and strong in Africa and among African Americans. And he is destroying the stereotypes, destroying the barriers that keep us apart as African people. And so his foray into community and culture in Africa demonstrated the affinity, the love, the similarity, the shared history, and the shared hope and aspirations that African people have everywhere, the love in particular. So get a chance, check him out. I Show Speed, he's on YouTube. I also was checking out, item that I've been watching on YouTube, and it just slipped my mind. I'll come back to it. Listen, I've got a couple of guests here, a couple of friends who are going to help me navigate a couple of stories today. Let me bring in James Trice and Corey Day. James Trice is a researcher, organizer, community organizer, heads the Public Policy Project. Brother James Trice, good afternoon. Welcome. How you doing?
I'm wonderful, Brother Al. How are you today?
I am well as well. And then Corey Day is here. And Corey Day is another seasoned strategist in the political world. And I wanted you guys to hang with me today just to go over things that you call hot topics, top of mind for you. And particularly, I wanted to go through your essay, James, one's going to appear in a couple of days in Inside News. And there's another essay I got from the mayor of Brooklyn Park, Winston Hollies. So I want to sort of share that essay and go over that with you as well. Corey Day, come in. How you doing? Let's bring you in the studio, first of all. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing well. Doing well. Thanks for having me. How you doing, James?
I'm good, brother. How you doing, man? We overdue.
Can't complain.
We overdue, man.
Yeah, I know. We gotta chop it up.
Well, let me say to our listeners here on KFAI and those who are on social media platforms, you're part of this conversation as well. Three guys kicking it, chopping it up, as we say, on important issues. We want your voice in this as well. You can communicate with us, be part of the conversation by joining the stream. Michelle has joined. Greetings, Brother Al and distinguished guests. Thank you, Sister Michelle. Thank you for being a loyal supporter. And I ask you, as you always do, and others, to share and like and comment and subscribe. Let people know this conversation is going down. Let me go with this first essay from the mayor of Brooklyn Park. You know, what I wanted to also do today is talk about two other things top of mind for me that I forgot a second ago. One is I continue to be fascinated with the development around the Alliance of Sahelian States, Burkina Faso, Niger, and Mali, and the emergence of these leaders who are all men who led military coups against their government, but they are redefining the relationship between African states and the minerals of those states and the opportunity for African people to benefit from their own resources, to nationalize or create strategic partnerships that allow the wealth to be retained or shared by their own people. And that in the context of a history of rabid exploitation of mineral and other precious resources, as well as the history of exploiting human resources from Africa. That's the African slave trade. Well, that's one thing top of mind. The second thing that was top of mind was, I guess I'm always curious about how we as a Black community are looking at the Jeffrey Epstein crisis. I call it a national and global crisis. So if you are listening, got a comment on Epstein, on Africa, Traore, and Mali, Niger, Burkina Faso, the Association of Sahelian States. If comments about the other comments we talk about today, love to have your voice. Join the conversation. Well, let's bring the first article up. And that article is one that says Minnesotans are losing millions to scams, and it's time to act. It's an article by the mayor of Brooklyn Park, Hollies Winston. So he says in 2024, in Minnesota, a Brooklyn Park man was sentenced to more than 5 years in prison in order to pay over $2 million in restitution to more than 250 victims of a four-year national romance fraud scheme. A year later, Brooklyn Park police were investigating a different type of scam. Individuals impersonating local law enforcement officers and demanding money from residents under the threat of jail time. These two incidents are not isolated. They're part of a broader and growing pattern. Across Minnesota, stories of individuals being scammed out of their savings are becoming more common. In the first three quarters of 2025 alone, Minnesotans lost more than $134 million to fraud, $20 million more than during the same period the year prior. The trend line is moving in the wrong direction. So he says, as mayor of Brooklyn Park, I see the devastation these crimes cause in our community. Small business owners lose working capital. Families and retirees see nest eggs and college savings disappear almost overnight. These are not just financial losses. They are setbacks that can take years to recover from. I have faith, this is Winston Hollis, the writer, the mayor of Brooklyn Park, saying, I have faith in our local law enforcement agencies and the work they do to track down and hold scammers accountable. But the nature and scale of these crimes make it clear that this is not something any single city or state can manage alone. Investigations have shown that many scams targeting Africans or targeting Americans originate from organized criminal syndicates operating in Southeast Asia. These groups run sophisticated operations from border regions beyond the practical reach of our local officers. They rely on trafficked workers and so-called scam centers to build relationships with victims over time before convincing them to hand over their savings. Most Minnesotans have likely received text messages, a notice from DMV claiming an outstanding toll balance, or a message from UPS about a fee for an unclaimed package. Many of these scams can be traced back to coordinated international networks. In recent years, Americans have lost more than $1 billion to these schemes. State and local officials can educate residents about warning signs and prevention. We can raise awareness, but we cannot dismantle international criminal networks, or coordinate multi-agency federal responses. That level of sophistication demands federal leadership. He goes on to say, to better protect Minnesotans, Congress should consider legislation establishing a coordinated task force that brings together relevant federal agencies and private sector partners to develop a comprehensive response plan. We need stronger investigative resources, enhanced coordination, and sustained international pressure to shut down foreign scam centers and to hold syndicates accountable. At the same time, we should be cautious about policies that unintentionally shift responsibility away from criminals. In recent years, some proposals have suggested requiring peer-to-peer platforms to cover losses tied to crimes committed on their services. That approach may sound simple, but it does not address the root problem. In some cases, it could even incentivize additional fraud by signaling that someone else will absorb the loss. Finally, he says, to stop scams, our leaders need to think comprehensively. Fraudsters exploit every financial channel, from cryptocurrency and wire transfers to gift cards and retirement accounts. Some even impersonate government agencies or elected officials. Our response must match the complexity and scale of the threat. Minnesotans deserve nothing less. Corey Day, let me go to you first. So contextualize this concern expressed by Mayor Hollis.
I know I have visited with Mayor Hollis in the past, and we've had different discussions about some of the things that some of his constituents are facing. And one of the things I know that he had a concern about is when it just comes to kind of these scams that target senior citizens and folks who aren't paying as much attention to these, you know, you get those text messages talking about, give us your address for if you want this package delivered to you. And then you also get these phishing deals that happen to you online from your emails. And I think what the mayor is just trying to kind of put out there is that he's been hearing just a lot of this going on right now when it comes to the folks that he governs, that, you know, these scammers are out there. They're very organized. They're international. And I think we just have to figure out different ways to attack this and ways that we need to legislate this. And I know that he had a few ideas, and I don't want to get too in the weeds legislatively, but I do think as we look at kind of the overall picture of everything from what's going on in Minnesota to kind of looking at this, these different schemes that are happening when it comes to kind of, you know, there's a lot of, you know, let's be real, a lot of those gangs in Eastern Europe that's doing this, gangs in Asia, gangs in Mexico that have figured out ways to kind of target these different online, these different platforms, these banking platforms. You know, there's a lot of, there's times where you have folks who, you know, they get a Venmo, they think it's their kid or they think it's a family member. And, you know, if you're not as familiar with it, you end up, you know, sending these folks or giving them access to your bank information. So I think that's what, I think that's what the mayor was really kind of aiming at. And he just wanted to make sure that, you know, the folks that he's had conversations with, that he's hearing them and that he's going to be trying to do what he can to see if there's any legislation. I know this is kind of it's a federal issue, but legislation federally that can probably help out folks in Brooklyn Park.
You know, I like everybody else, get regular phishing efforts. You know, James, maybe you do as well. And I'm glad he's taking this position of educating, elevating the concern so that people don't feel like they're isolated. Because some people will feel if they make a mistake and go for something, they feel embarrassed, you know, and they then don't report it, don't respond, and they suffer the loss, which is terrible. They shouldn't. So to talk about it is very important, and kudos to the mayor for elevating this for ordinary people in our community.
And that's a real good call out, Al, because a lot of folks don't tell anyone about it because of embarrassment. They just kind of, you know, push it aside and kind of let it go. And I do think we need to make sure that folks understand this happens to thousands of people. You're not alone. And there needs to be avenues and folks that you can talk to when it comes to trying to remedy these things. And I think what the legislation does, it really tries to focus on law enforcement when it comes to going after those different gangs that target American citizens.
I'm Al McFarland. This is The Conversation with Al McFarland, talking to Corey Day of Blue Lock Strategies and James Trice, who's with the Public Policy Project. We just shared an article that will appear online at insidenews.com and in the next edition of Inside News, an article, an essay, op-ed written by Mayor Hollies Winston, Mayor of Brooklyn Park, encouraging, urging informed and broad action to protect consumers against scammers. James, any thoughts on that? Any stories or experience or recommendations from the public policy point of view? What can
we be doing? Thank you. I thank the mayor for sharing that information. And I think what we all have to do is really share with ourselves, each other, some practical ways that people can actually deal with it and protect themselves from it. I've been also approach with, as many of us, with spam and phishing emails or text messages and so forth. And I think one thing is to either delete it and report it as spam or report it as phishing. There's a option in your email where you can report it as phishing and report it as spam and do that as often as possible. You know, if somebody sends you something saying that you have an outstanding ticket through an email and you need to respond, the issue is the government knows how to reach you. They will send you something in the mail, right? And that, and I'm not saying this to shame anybody. I'm just saying, just understand that. So the government knows how to find you if that's what's going on, right? That's one. Number two, if something seems too good to be true, then it is, right? And just don't trust it. Just like, no, that's too good to be true. Also, I think one other thing, I think many times things come in the mail, text message, emails that mimic or have the name of somebody who you're familiar with, a name of somebody that you say, oh, that's my buddy Sam. He sent me something. But read it closely and just kind of like, does it sound like him? Does it sound like something?
Well, you know, I've gotten friends. I've gotten emails from, one was from a friend of mine who said he was in Kenya and had just gotten carjacked in Nairobi. Of course, he wasn't in Kenya. He was here in North Minneapolis, right? But that's the system. I got another one from a sister friend who said she was back home in Puerto Rico. And the same scenario, I need money because something happened and I got an hour. Can you do this? And so it's a bum rush, right? And you feel like you're obligated to help people that you know that part of your life, you know. But so what do you do?
That's right. because you care about those people and you're like, oh, but I want to help. And it's going to come from somebody, but it is going to come from somebody who you get regular emails from. And that's what's going to come from people who you associate with. And then you got to understand, just think for a second before pushing, respond and say, let me send this money to you. Just stop for a second, pause and say, would this person be in this situation? How would this person reach me if they were really in trouble? Is this person really there? And don't trust it. And you know, reported the spam or phishing or whatever else. So there's ways you can protect yourself as well. I'm glad that Hollis is, you know, really, really asking and really, you know, really demanding in the sense that the government step in and really do something, because people are really being harmed by this. And hopefully there's some legislation that can happen. But no legislation can deal with if you buy into it. You have to begin to think for yourself and say, no, that doesn't sound like my friend. They wouldn't send me something like that, and so I'm not going to respond. Or if somebody says you have a ticket and it's outstanding and we're going to come arrest you, they know how to send you something mm-hmm. in the mail that says that, an official letter or something like that, and then make a phone call, but never online, you know, that kind of thing. So.
Well, yeah, no matter where you are, either on Twitter or LinkedIn or Facebook or YouTube, love to have your comments on this. In fact, drop a note, shout out where you are, let us know where you're listening from so we can shout out you as well. James, I ask you to also share another piece that you've written, a commentary piece that's coming up in the additional next issue of Inside News. Why don't you walk us through it? You can either read it or read parts of it, however you want to approach it. It's a long piece, so maybe not the whole piece, but you might want to pick out some of the key positions that you're taking, key analysis that you're making, and you know, we'll talk about it.
Right, right. I'm not going to read the whole thing. I'm asking people to go online or however you're going to publish it, Al, online and then in the print when it comes out, and ask people to read it. But I think it's a very important piece. It's entitled The Right to Alter or Abolish. And I get that from the, 1777 Declaration of Independence, to the United States. And really, it essentially what I'm trying to get at, the point I'm trying to make is that the Declaration essentially says that all men are created equal and endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights, and that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their powers from the consent of the governed. So I want you to pay attention to the word governed. Deriving their powers from the consent of the governed. That whenever any form of government, now here's my point I'm trying to make, whenever any form of government becomes destructive to these ends, what ends? The rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, it is the right of the people or the governed to alter or abolish it and to institute new governments, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers with such as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. I wrote that because many people believe that we're living in a tyrannical system of government under this present administration. Most people call it a regime, right? Not a presidency, and that our rights are being stripped from us, right? Our books have been banned, books that talk about history and whatever else. DEI programs are being dismantled, and social service programs are being cut or altered, and all of these things, right? And these affect our life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And under this tyrannical, narcissistic, government, this leader in Donald Trump, our life, liberty, and our pursuit of happiness really been impacted. And so my point is that we as the governed have the right to alter and abolish it. So right now, the Republicans or this administration has a trifecta. He controls the executive branch, the legislative branch, and the judicial branches of government, which means he can basically do whatever he wants to do. That's why he's been able to do so many things unabated. The Congress is not holding them accountable because they, under the same system of belief, And so therefore they're able to impose these things on us. But we, in the Declaration of Independence, no matter how flawed the writers are, you know, Thomas Jefferson being the chief architect of the Declaration of Independence, owns more than 600 slaves, probably more than any slave owner at that time, still wrote this declaration saying that all men are created equal. Now, let's be clear about this. When they said all men are created equal, they at that time meant white men, and particularly white landowners, what they mean, right? That's what they really meant. They didn't really intend in their mind to include us, all citizens, all people who were born and naturalized in the United States. But I submit to you that God, when he created each one of us, he created us to have dominion over everything but each other. He didn't want us to dominate each other. He said you could have dominion over the land, over the fish, over the air, over the, whatever else, but he didn't give us dominion over each other to treat each other any kind of way. So let me get back to my point. The point I'm trying to make is that we have a midterm election coming up November 3rd, 2026. And in order for us to alter our, to change this trajectory that we're on under this present administration or this present regime, one way we can do that is by flipping the Congress, right? Right now, you know, under this Congress, in this present Congress, you know, the Republicans have a 53-45 majority in the Senate. In the House, they have a 218-214 majority. If we flip that, right? So let me say this. All 435 House districts are being contested. All 435 in Congress. Mm-hmm. 33 of the 100 seats in the Senate are up for election. Corey Day knows this quite well. That's what that state. What needs to happen in order for us to flip the Congress, and let me just be clear, the three branches of government were set to hold each other accountable, right? That one will not get out of control, that the other branches won't step in and hold the other one accountable. That's what the system was set up to do. That's because the Republicans have control, then he's able to move whatever agenda he wants to move, this present administration, Donald Trump. If we flip the Congress, it's very, very crucial that we do this, right? Because in the Congress, the House is the one that initiate proceedings to impeach. And it's the Senate that does the prosecution of the impeachment. So they're the ones that follow through and impeach. So we can get an impeachment of Donald Trump. When I say we, I mean Democrats can get an impeachment of Donald Trump if they flip the House. What we need, or flip the Congress, what's needed is, I got my numbers here, we need four seats, and Corey, help me out with this if I'm off. I think we need to win a net of four congressional districts and a net of three Senate seats in order to flip the Congress. When I say net, that means we can't afford to lose any. We have to maintain what we got.
You gotta hold.
And we have to hold what we have, but we have to get a net of four in the House and three in the Senate. So let me say this. In the last election, 75 million people voted for Kamala Harris. 75. More than 77 million people chose to vote for a 34-time adjudicated felon and twice impeached person over Kamala Harris, a black woman. I'm gonna let you sit with that for a second. 77 million people chose to vote for a 34-time convicted felon over a black woman. Let that sink in for a second. However, here's the most egregious part about this last election. More than 85 million registered voters did not vote. 85 million people, registered voters, did not vote. This one organization says, if I did not vote, were a presidential candidate, they would have beat Donald Trump by 9.1 million votes. Now think about how crucial that is. It is our right, grounded in the Declaration of Independence, followed up by, the Constitution, followed up by that, right, to alter or abolish this the existing governmental structure that we're under. It is our right to do that. And the way, one way we do that is by voting, right? So let's be clear about this. The purpose of the Declaration of Independence declares that governments are created to secure unalienable rights. If they fail to do so, they may be altered or abolished. The right to is intended for when a long train of abuses and usurpations reveals a design to reduce the people under absolute despotism. Let's be clear about what despotism is. It's a dictatorship, it's tyranny, it's the exercise of absolute power, especially in cruel and oppressive way. Nobody would argue with us looking at what just recently took place in Minnesota with the ICE agents, what's happening all over the country, and that frankly, all over the world under this administration, that these are not dictatorship, tyrannical events that have taken place. Matter of fact, when Donald Trump ran for office, he said he wanted to be a dictator, and that's what he's moving to do. The people can stop that if they get out and vote. So the prudence declares that Declaration notes that the government long established should not be changed for light or transient causes, meaning that this is not a light or transient cause. These DEI programs that are being destroyed, these programs, these social service programs, the Meals on Wheels and other programs that have been cut to help people, to take care of people who are in under hard times, these tariffs, a lot of them, all of them are hurting us as American people. We need to understand that. And so while advocating for change is protected by the First Amendment, voting and assembly, the attempting to violate or overthrow the government is not. One of the tyrannical things that Donald Trump tried to do in January 26, 2021 is to overthrow an election. Mm-hmm. These are reasons for us to institute or to carry out our duty and our right, our responsibility to alter and change the present situation that we find ourselves in. So essentially, what I want to say is this. In order for us to change this, we have to show up in the midterm election this November 3rd, 2026, and vote, right? Make sure you're registered to vote. Make sure your registration is up to date. And make sure you go out and vote. Now, you may have to stand in long lines. You may have to stand in lines when the weather is inclement. It may be some horrible weather. I would submit to you, do that. If you can vote early, vote early. But we need to show up in mass numbers to make sure that we change the trajectory and at least level off the present administration's power. He has the trifecta. He controls executive, legislative, and judicial. We could take away that, and so then we can have a Congress that can hold him in check. And hopefully, if we take over both chambers, the House and the Senate, then we can possibly get an impeachment, and it can go through.
Okay. I'm Al McFarland. This is The Conversation with Al McFarland. You're just listening to Brother James Trice from the Public Policy Project. Also here with us today, Corey Day of Blue Ox Strategies. Benjamin Roberts from over at Hallie Q. Brown dropped a note. He asked, brothers, what do you think it'll take in order to get more Black people politically involved in a way that's not reactionary? And Benny, if you want to go deeper on that, just keep sending more chats in. Thank you for the chat. What do you mean? And you know, maybe broaden the question. But Corey wanted to respond to Benny's question and also to James's layout of the opportunity for us to change government consistent with the authority the Constitution gives us. Before you do that, James, I was trying to mirror what you're saying and sort of taking the position of the opposition. And is what you've described what, in fact, MAGA and the Tea Party have done? and they've amalgamated a majority or control of the three major institutions, and they said pretty much the rest of us can go to hell, which is, you know, and right. They're creating hell for us. That's what I think. And so, you know, what you're describing is not the solution for one or the other. Everybody's got to strive to get their position to prevail. Is that correct, James? Am I on the right track?
Yeah, I just think it's a solution to a change in this. There's other ways that we can do that, other actions that we can take. I think we continue to protest. I think we continue to show up in mass. I think we continue to educate our communities. We have to do all of that, not just voting, but voting is a crucial way for us to do it. If I can answer the question that the brother asked about what can we do, you know, it's interesting how many people are not educated on what's happening. You know, I talk to people on the street and I ask them, do you understand what the three branches of government are? And they don't. People don't know what the three branches of government. And I'm like, and I asked them how old they are. I asked this young man, he was like 30 something years old. And I said, you know, we have three branches of government. And he had no idea what three branches of government are. He had no idea, you know, what the House or the Senate is responsible for. Matter of fact, he had no idea the Declaration of Independence and when it was written and who wrote it. No idea. And so I think one way we can get people educated, and I think we have to go back to that, because civics back in school, it was taken out somewhere along the line. We have to begin to teach our kids about this.
Corey, did you jump in?
No, just to jump on what James said, he's totally right. One of the biggest problems we have today is that kids don't know basic civics. And it is because the schools stopped teaching civics, they stopped teaching history in any real kind of way. And you're starting to see the results of that, where our citizens are less engaged because they know less. And I think that is a problem for sure. And just to answer what the brothers talked about being reactionary. I mean, I think the reality of it is, and it's, you know, elections are they're reactionary. That's just how Donald Trump was a reaction to Obama, right? Mm-hmm. So the challenge we have is that I'm okay if it's somewhat reactionary. That at least they're paying attention. They're mad. They're angry. They're using their feet to go make change. And I think the one thing we're seeing right now in this is regime, which is the total right way to say it, is that people are being slapped in their face to pay attention to this. It's right there. I mean, even if you don't understand the total of civics and the three forms of government, what you do understand is that Donald Trump is taking food off people's table. He's destroying DEI programs. All of this is understood. And so I am excited that even if it's reactionary, that folks are gonna you know, make change with their feet this election cycle. And I think as we were sitting on the day of the State of the Union, that happens tonight with
that's tonight, right? Yeah,
that's tonight. Yeah, I think the one thing you're going to see tonight and what we've seen in the last year in some change is that there are no norms anymore, right? There were things that used to exist that, you know, it was a norm to give your tax return up. It was a norm to put your business in a trust, right? These were norms. What I am really curious about, and James is right, we need to get win the midterms. We need to get the House back. I'm a little, you know, I'm not the Senate's going to be an uphill challenge, but I do believe we're well positioned to get the House back, the purse strings back. We'll be able to actually have investigative power in the House, which will hopefully be used. But I question and I wonder what's going to be next after we've gone through 4 years of this. What does it bring next when you've gone? I mean, we're only a year and some change into this, and we invaded Venezuela. We're about to go to war with Iran. We're trying to take over Canada. We're trying to buy Greenland. I mean, just think of what we've seen in a year. Every norm has been broken. Let me, and I hate to play the whataboutisms game, but we are sitting in a position right now where our president took a Boeing jet from a foreign country. His kids have made $1 billion on crypto and no one cares. It's the craziest thing I've ever seen. I've never seen Congress become so inept ever where they just don't care. The thing that I'm very curious about is we're going to make it through this. We're going to survive this. The question is, how does our republic look after this? And that's going to be something I'm really curious about. But to the brother's question, being upset, being angry, all those reasons are darn good reasons to go to the polls, and I'll take it, you know, every time and twice on Sunday.
So it's not an either or. Reactionary is good, or planful, intentional is good as well. And maybe planful, intentional is the step above being reactionary. Reactionary motivates you to think, to study, to learn, and to engage your own self and your community. You know, I was thinking, you mentioned, you know, Canada, and when you say Canada, I think about, you mentioned Canada and Greenland, I think, targets of Trump's takeover fantasy, which we really can't call fantasy anymore, because he's demonstrated the capacity to act. Look at Venezuela and look at the alignment of war craft and war assets sitting off of Iran right now. And, you know, the talk in the community is that a strike in Iran could be imminent. And that's believable because it happened just like this just weeks ago in Venezuela.
You don't move that much hardware in there. You don't move that much hardware in there just to park it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's not just for parking. It's for a reason. And it says that this specific action makes you think differently about Greenland and Canada, right? Because, you know, the first, when you first hear Trump say, oh, Canada should be the next state, or we should have Greenland and they'll sell it to us, you say, he's just crazy. That's crazy Donald Trump. But we've witnessed now the machinery of and the movement of our national apparatus to enable these things. So we can't discount that he will, if he can't do it, that he won't try to do it. He has said, you know, even when I think the courts shot him down recently, what was the thing recently?
They stopped him. Shot him down for his tariffs.
Tariffs. He came and said, well, I'm gonna sue them again. I'm gonna go back, you know. So he's not quitting. He's gonna keep doing it.
You know, you know what they said our biggest problem is with Donald Trump? A lack of imagination. We sit here and believe that he's just talking, that he's not going to do this. We don't imagine that Donald Trump can do this. You know what? That's our problem. So there's nothing that's off the table with this man. There's nothing that we should ever look at when it comes out of his mouth that is not a possibility. I mean, when he said he was going to deport, I don't know what it was, millions of people, none of us believed that he would put the mechanics in place to actually try to do that. He did. And the thing we have to realize when it comes to Donald Trump, unlike his first term, there was actually guardrails, right? There was actually a few patriots left who actually knew that we have to slow him down or stop him. One thing he learned from 16 to 24 is that he put nothing but loyalists. There are no guardrails anymore. There's no one that's going to ever say, Mr. President, we can't do that. And so we got to have our imaginations have to be in a place where when he says, I'm going to do this, when he says, I'm going to make sure that I federalize voting, it's not a joke. We have to take those things really serious.
And after this, you never need to vote again.
To that point, Al, and to what you said, and just underscore, Corey, what you said, we have to understand is that Donald Trump is just the avatar. I mean, he is just the representation of what they think, because he's not doing this in a vacuum. He's doing this with the support of people, and the people who voted for him believe this same thing. And so we have to understand that they have the same mindset as he do. He's just carrying the water for them. Otherwise, they would stop him.
Let's make a distinction. I think you're talking about not the 77 million people, ordinary people who voted for him, who were convinced that he offered a solution and a strategy, a way for them to protect what they believe they deserve, and that is whatever their picture of America was, right? White America. But that's not who's directing him. He's directing them. Who's directing him is who? And I think the concept of oligarchy and the concept of international, not an American, not a patriotic, but a wealth-based, power-based cabal, I think is something that we need to look at differently. What do you think, James and Corey?
I'll jump on this. I couldn't agree more. I mean, it's almost cute to think about them being angry about Biden's laptop. I mean, and actually being upset because he served on a board of an oil company. Watching what his kids have, they said, hold my beer, because what they
are being upset with Obama for wearing a brown suit.
What these folks have done, it's unbelievable. And to your point, this is the one thing I think that really blows me away is that it is, you know, kids of presidents have forever, they've traded on their father's names. That's one of your chips you get when your dad's the vice president or president. They're always going to do that. That's how they make their money. But what we've seen with this administration is that they're actually putting our foreign policy up for sale. Mm-hmm. You see, when it came to selling the AI chips, when it comes to what they've done with the car, it is unbelievable what they've done with the Middle East overall when it comes to our foreign policy, because it's for sale. And one last thing I have to say, because it's another one of those things that drives me nuts. He has literally pardoned drug dealers, scammers, crypto scammers. He has pardoned someone every week. And it's always some new criminal who they don't even hide how they paid him off. Mm-hmm. They use Roger Stone, or they use one of his intermediaries. They don't care. And what do we don't say a word about this man who literally is saying, I'm invading Venezuela because of fentanyl, but then releases one of the largest fentanyl dealers in the world.
It's a contradiction, right?
Unbelievable.
And so when you said they, we have to understand it's more than him. It's the system that supports him. And that's why it's a regime as opposed to an administration. And let me just say, though, Al, it does, too, the 77 million people who voted for him, they saw that they voted for him after he was convicted. After mm-hmm. he did a lot of these things, they still voted for him. That means they think like him. So what's up with the 85 million or the 90 million that did not vote, right? And so what I'm saying is I think a lot of people want to focus on him as a man, and he is part of the issue, but he has a system that sustains what he's doing and that undergirds everything that he's doing, and they're individuals. So when you vote, these individuals, and they vote for senators and whatever, they're voting for senators that are going to continue to support and allow him to do the things that Corey just so eloquently laid out.
And he's still, as we sit here,
let me invite one more voice to the conversation. My friend and childhood friend, attorney Kamal J. King, is logged in from Atlanta. Brother Kamal, how you doing? Now, you've been backstage for a bit. Thank you for jumping on. Any first thoughts or impressions on this conversation or other things that are top of mind for you?
I'm finding it quite interesting. And I think that you brothers are pretty much on point. I don't know if you've had an opportunity to watch any of the documentaries on the Revolutionary War and, this battle that we're facing now, this democracy battle, has been a question since the beginning of the nation. One of the signers of the Declaration of Independence remarked when they said that everyone was going to vote, he said, even the stupid ones get an opportunity to vote. So it's been a question all along. And I think that what we're experiencing now is a expression of that issue, should everyone vote? Plus, on top of that is the racism in the country. Like someone said earlier, that Trump was a reaction to Obama. Yeah, to some folk. But he pulled a lot of Black people in, Black men who thought that because he was, quote, a businessman, that he would help them economically, and not understanding the history and who he is, his racist history that goes back to his father, his family. So I'm interested in what you're saying, but this is nothing new. What we're experiencing right here is nothing new. It's just a continuation of racism and a continuation of elitism. And I like what my senator said, because I think that helps frame the question. My senator John Ossoff, when he said we're fighting against the Epstein class, I think that helps frame the issue.
Well, let's pivot there and get reactions to Epstein and the unraveling of the information systems and what impact that will have, should have, on our country, our systems, and the world. What we do notice is that Britain, at this point, has charged two people, one the former prince and another a state official, for inappropriate use of government knowledge information associated with Epstein. So people are saying, if Britain can act, why can't the United States act to bring awareness and to trial people who violated, trafficked human beings, women, children? And the question is why? So that's one question. The second question, I'm not sure the thread, but you guys can make it, is I am appalled by the announcement of a board of peace? Is that what he announced last week? A board of peace. He's asking X number of countries to drop in $1 billion each, that he would be the president for life of the board for peace, and that they would oversee the development, the redevelopment of the Gaza Strip, and that they were talking about how many hotels and beachfront properties and how much they do, apparently suggesting that they'll also pay attention to the people that were dispossessed by the war against Gaza. But James, Corey, talk about both those things. Put them together for me.
Wow. Well,
go ahead, James.
Yeah, thanks, Corey. I think the first question that you asked, I think the answer to why are we allowing these perpetrators, these violators, these sex abusers, these child molesters to really go free, and the traffickers, allowing them freedom to continue to move about the cabin. The answer thing is in your question, is that America's always been in the trafficking of bodies peace, always been in that since the beginning, 1619 or before, when they trafficked millions and millions of Africans from Africa and brought them here. That's the foundation of America. Has always been involved with that, right? So I didn't see it as a surprise to do it. I do, though, think that they are selective at who they come at, because I want to submit to you that these were a group of black men, all of them were in prison. Mm-hmm. Every single one of them would be in prison. Yeah. I mean, and burn down the island or whatever. I mean, so is it a difference? Since most of these individuals, I haven't seen at this point yet where there's any black people involved with it, but I'm sure they may be. I'm not for sure, but most of them have been wealthy white men. You got people like Bill Gates and others who are millionaires, billionaires, who have been trafficking little girls, right? This should be summarily condemned, and every single one of them, no matter how much money they got, should go to prison. But they're not allowing it because a lot of them sustain America. A lot of them, you know, they get money in places, so people are excusing it. The only thing I'm surprised by is the amount of women who are protecting these men who molested these girls, right? One survivor, actually, I certainly said I'm dumb when I say this, one survivor who was did a press conference at the end condemning the fact that they're not going after these guys actually said, "I voted for you, Donald Trump." Now, hold on a second. You just voted right. for a man.
I saw that, yeah.
Right, you just voted for a man who know you did this, and now because he won't do nothing, and then you say, "I voted for you." I don't get that. Why would you vote for a man who you know was doing this, and then now you're upset that he won't do anything to address it? Well, he's not, because he's part of it. So anyway, I think the answer is in your question. The fact is that America is based in trafficking of human beings in life and the exploitation of life and human life. I think that's why it continues to be.
Yeah, I think the one thing that to look at is that I find fascinating is that you had an entire party that built their foundation on the Epstein files. And how easy it is to put a cloth over their eyes and for them to believe that the president, who all of a sudden, nothing to see here, go look that way, we're gonna do, you know, and they say okay to it. I mean, I'm more blown away, not just by, because I'm not blown away by the class of people and how these folks who try to run the world. I'm more blown away from the people who literally sat on podcasts and radio shows and op-eds and talked about this for years. And the fact that it's so blatantly obvious that Trump is hiding something and they're not giving all the files out, there's a reason for it. And the fact that they've let that go blows me away. And just want to say one quick last thing. When it comes, we're talking about the black men who voted for Trump. I think one of the things that, and I know James agrees with me on this, because we've talked about this in the past. The challenge with that is the Democratic Party has to be better at talking to black men. And when they have no option, no home, you listen to anything, right? And I think what happened is that, and you're seeing it now as the Democratic Party tries to find itself and get its footing again, that it lost its way. And that's when you saw Latinos and black men and others stray away to the dark side because they weren't given any other options.
So is the governor of California the pathway to connecting black men back to the party or not? I don't think so, but what do you think?
I've never heard anyone say someone from San Francisco is gonna be the way we connect black men.
I'd like to go back to this Epstein issue. Rich people very seldom go to jail in America.
Yeah.
You know, rich people very seldom go to jail in America. As a matter of fact, it's
unless you're black.
And it's an exception when they do. So the people who were involved with Epstein was a technician with regard to who he recruited, the type of information that he got from them. And those people just don't go to jail as a general rule. Mm-hmm. Plus, you guys remember when Trump said, I could murder someone on Fifth Avenue and my people are still behind me. Mm-hmm. And I think that he's true with that. He has a solid 25-30% of the electorate, regardless of what he does.
40.
Yeah, of the electorate.
49%
of the electorate in the last election.
49% today.
So basically what he has to do is pull about 25%. The other point I want to make is capitalism has it's just out of control in America. The things that were supposed to the three branches of government were supposed to kind of keep everything in check. The legislature supposed to keep the president in check and the judicial supposed to keep everything in check. Well, now money controls. Yeah. And that's the reason that these politicians are so afraid of doing it, because they'll primary them and just throw money in the election. And what people hear on TV, regardless of whether it's true or not, that's who they're going to vote for. Mm-hmm. And I think that money has just gotten completely in control. And remember, I don't know if you guys read Marx and Engels, but they talked about capitalism and they said that if it plays all the way out, then one or two people are going to own everything. And That's the way we're headed.
We got less than a minute. Let me ask each of you to give a 15-minute second reflection on Jesse Jackson. He died this past week, Tuesday. Wow. James Joyce?
Wow, I just want to say he was an incredible man. I had a chance to meet him. I actually participated with his son in the Jackson Action Task Force when I lived in Chicago. And it was the Jackson Action Task Force that met, I think, weekly. I think we met at the Push office. And I used to see Jesse, each time I walk in there. Or each
Corey, you got 10 seconds, Corey.
Okay.
We lost a giant, and I hope the Democratic Party realizes it wouldn't be what it is today when it comes to diversity without Jesse Jackson, what he did in 84.
I worked with Jesse in Kansas City with Bernard Powell.